Hello, everyone, and welcome to Beyond Awakening, the Future of Spiritual Practice. I'm Paul Taylor, the president of Evolving Wisdom, one of the organizations producing this event. Tonight, we'll be continuing this deep exploration of the future of spiritual practice with tonight's guest, spiritual teacher, Hales Watkins. Gary Patton is the visionary behind this groundbreaking series and online community, and our host tonight. Gary is a leading voice in the field of integral evolutionary practice, leadership, and spirituality, who coaches, challenges, supports, and connects evolutionaries all over the world. He is the author with Ken Wilber of Integral Life Practice. Welcome, Terry.
Thank you, Paul. And hello, everybody. Welcome. As you know, this series was created to serve the evolution of consciousness and culture by creating the space for a deep public dialogue about how our spirituality can play a transformative role in helping us rise to the challenges of our time and make this obviously unprecedented transition to a sustainable human presence on our planet. We're facing profound ecological and engineering challenges right now, but the cultural and spiritual challenges are probably more fundamental and less well understood. So that's our focus here. And we are having a whole series of really enlivening and probing and adventuresome conversations in which we focused on many specific aspects of this question. And tonight I'm delighted to be joined in conversation by Hale Dwoskin in a dialogue entitled Letting Go and Beyond. Hale is the New York Times best-selling author of The Sedona Method and the CEO and director of training for Sedona Training Associates, an organization that teaches courses based on the emotional releasing techniques that were originated by his mentor, Lester Levinson. He's featured in the recently released movie, Letting Go, which is quite remarkable. It's probably the best movie I've seen on a personal transformation technique, a real pleasure to watch. Hale's an international speaker and featured faculty member at Esalen and the Omega Institute and a founding member of the Transformational Leadership Council. For over 30 years, he's regularly been teaching the Sedona Method techniques to individuals and corporations all over the world. It offers practical tools that can be used every day to let go of the anxiety, anger, frustration, and limiting emotions that prevent us from recognizing our true nature and that cause us to re-identify with the dream. And you can find out more about his work at Sedona.com and Letting Go TV. It's a real delight to welcome you, Hale, as my guest tonight.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, wonderful. As you know, we're in the middle of this kind of probing conversation about how our spirituality can enable us to serve our world more effectively. Maybe you can tell us a little more about your work, about letting go, and about how that might shine a light on the challenges of being a conscious and responsible global citizen.
Oh, sure. So basically, the work that we teach is just very profound and simple ways of doing just two things. Letting go of all our sense of inner limitation, all our holdbacks, our limiting thoughts, feelings, and beliefs, and in recognizing the truth of who we are. They obviously go hand in hand. I could actually explain it for a long period of time, but I think I'll take the short route first, and then we can get into discussion, and I'll keep adding things. And how it relates to the discussion is that in my experience, we generally keep reliving the same patterns in consciousness over and over and over again in our relationships, with our money, with our health, and especially our mass patterns with the world. I mean, there's a growing minority on the planet who know that we're heading towards a cliff fast, and there's a large majority who suspect as much. But in my experience, unless we actually shift our mass consciousness and our consciousness individually, the cliff seems to be inevitable because we're holding in mind a picture that is extremely limited and getting more so every day. And what I've found is that when people let go, when they let go of their strain, their effort, their struggle, their limiting thoughts and beliefs, and they, when they see through that limiting identification as that that separate me or I, they spontaneously act with more love and compassion. They spontaneously are drawn towards doing what's for the highest and best good, not just for themselves, but for everyone. And it's a natural progression or a natural outcome from letting go.
So maybe the first thing that I think many people would want to hear more of is, well, so how do you let go? Maybe you can
sure.
Unpack the practical.
Yeah, well, let's unpack it a little. It'd be nice tonight. I'd like to give some, before we get into the more philosophical conversation or the global conversation, it'd be nice to give out a couple of tools that people can start to use right away to feel happier, more alive, more present, and to maybe have a little more of what they'd like in life. So let's unpack. I'll put my luggage down, even though I wasn't carrying any. So first let me explain what I mean by letting go. And the best way to do that is for us all to pick up an object in our hands, a pen, a pencil, some object that you'd be willing to drop to the floor, to drop to your desk, wherever you're listening to this. And if you don't feel inclined to participate, then just simply imagine this exercise as we go through it together. But I recommend you do this because it's very simple, but just this little thing we're going to do together, I found, can be very transformative. And so this object that you're holding in your hand represents your unwanted emotions, your self-limiting thoughts and beliefs, and all your identities, all those labels you've put on yourself. And your hand represents, on one level, maybe your gut, but on a deeper level, just simply awareness. Now take the object and grip it really tightly with your hand. Now, if you did this long enough, it would start to feel really uncomfortable and then really familiar, because this is what we're doing all the time with our limiting thoughts and beliefs and feelings. So that's enough gripping. Open your hand and roll the object around in your hand. Now notice that the object isn't attached to your hand. But if you think about your identities and your limiting thoughts, feelings, and beliefs, they're usually things that we think we are, both consciously and subconsciously. It's even in our language. When we're angry, we don't usually say, I'm angry. I mean, we don't usually say, I feel angry. We say, I am angry. When we're sad, we don't usually say, I feel sad. We say, I am sad. We actually think we are the emotion. And the same thing is true with limiting beliefs. We don't usually say, this was a failure. We say, I'm a failure. I'm the failure. And because of that, because of that identification, we don't realize that every limiting thought, feeling, belief, and identity is as attached to us as this object is attached to your hand. So close your hand lightly around the object, turn your hand upside down, and just simply let go. That's what I mean by letting go. It's very, very simple. But it, because it's so simple, it can be very profound. And what we do at Stone and Training Associates, what we do in the Letting Go movie and in our programs, is we teach actually five ways of letting go. The first way is simply deciding to drop it, like dropping the pen. The second way of letting go we teach is welcoming what you're experiencing. If you just allow what is to be, it tends to let go all by itself. The third way we teach of letting go is by diving into the core of that limiting thought, feeling, or belief. It's counterintuitive, but it's very powerful, because what you discover is that all limitation is merely on the surface. When you go past the obvious, when you go deeper than that, what you discover is presence or awareness or truth, and that dissolves that imaginary bubble. The fourth way of letting go is just simply embracing the opposites that we usually experience throughout our days. Most of us experience life as a series of dualities or a series of polarities. We varying degrees of happiness and sadness, varying degrees of love and hate, etc. And we spend a lot of time and energy trying to keep what we hate as far away from what we love as possible. But when you embrace the two, when you welcome the two, they dissolve each other like matter and antimatter, and or like positive and negative charge. And what you're left with is that empty but yet full awareness that you are. And so if you welcome both sides of the polarity, that's the fourth way of letting go. And the fifth way of letting go is actually not a way at all. It's simply a perspective. And it's based on just two simple things. That presence of awareness, that beingness, that truth that you are is already here, already now, already shining in plain view. And that sense of separation, that sense of me, that sense of identity, is actually never here. And if you look for it in this moment, you discover that it's absent. It's only a memory. So that's the fifth way we teach of letting go. And all that is what we communicate in our seminars and in the Letting Go movie.
So letting go really is a series of easy, ready, kind of hip pocket, simple, spacious tools to return to our non-dual nature, to relax the clench of mind and feeling that otherwise takes us out of the flow of isness that mm-hmm. is really what's here before we lay our contracted responses on it and filter it through that
right.
more narrow aperture.
Mm-hmm.
And the as an expression of that non-dual awareness, it's really standing, you know, right in the center of the ancient mystical paths that have been presenced by some of the other teachers on this series. And there's a couple of interesting dialogues that take place within this whole series. One of them
yes.
is between people who kind of argue that there's a preference for the unconditioned in the classical spiritual orientation, that in letting go of all these contractions, we can bypass the juice and responsibility and even some of the, you know, that we have to care about the relative and we have to engage the relative, and that if we just keep letting go or just keep dissolving into our spacious ground, we somehow are failing to be fully incarnate. This was the point of view that Robert Augustus Masters and Diane Bardwell Masters particularly brought forward just a couple of weeks ago.
Sure.
I wonder how you would address that possible objection to the approach that you're bringing.
Sure. Actually, the what we teach is quite unique in that it embraces both points of view. And it does it in several polarities. Another polarity in the non-dual space is that there's absolutely nothing you can do about the truth of who you are. And the other says that engaged inquiry or exploration can help you rediscover the truth of who you are. And most people even believe there's one or the other. And then there's the one you brought up, which is that if we just simply allow ourselves to explore the truth of who we are, it can and often does turn into a spiritual bypass. And what's unique about the Sedona method is that, and what we explore is that we say yes and yes. Yes, if you're just simply letting go or inquiring into the truth of who you are and you're denying or avoiding or pretending that the world as it is doesn't need to be dealt with, then the world will probably deal with you in sometimes harsh ways. And it is a denial of the perfection that's also in the suffering, in the apparent duality. So what we do with the Sedona method is we embrace what we're experiencing in the moment, and then we have a choice, even though there is no chooser. We're using language here. To either let it play out as it does, or to get engaged in using whatever we're experiencing in the moment as a doorway to greater freedom from self-imposed limitation, or as a doorway to discovering that there is no door and no one to walk through it. What we teach is about not either or, but and. And by the way, we don't recommend you change your language to avoid using the words like either or but, and you substitute it with and. That's a waste of time too. What we do is we just simply embrace the human experience as it is and give tools to immediately alleviate suffering. And these tools do not require you embracing a non-dual perspective. And at the same time, what we found is that as people let go, as people explore the truth of who they are through using these various tools, the non-dual perspective tends to come to the foreground. It tends to become more obvious, more available, and often more profound. But at the same time, it's not about pretending you don't have bills to pay. And it's also not about locking yourself into your suffering. It's about knowing that suffering occasionally appears to happen, and that as you embrace it, as you allow it to be as it is, and you let go, you tend to deal more appropriately with life, and there tends to be less of an experience of suffering. Not that there isn't still, of course, challenges and physical pain, but you don't identify with them. And so I don't believe it's ever really either or, it's and.
So the this letting go of identification, letting go of a fixed point of view, renders you just as able to care and intend and be engaged with life as before, just from a place of a kind of spacious continuity and flow and non-attachment?
Yes, and it also actually makes you more capable in my experience. There's these polarities. On one end, there's this whole group of us who are avoiding life completely by saying, hey, it's not real, we don't have to deal with it, it's just an illusion, so forget it. And then there's the other part of us who are saying it's all real, this is all there is, and we really need to deal with it, otherwise we're going to die. And in my experience, there's something in between those two. And what's in between is, yes, of course, ultimately this is all just an illusion. But it's the illusion that this body-mind is living in at the moment, at least appears to be. And so it's important to honor that what's being experienced in this moment and deal with it appropriately. And as you let go, what you do is you naturally uncover the loving kindness and compassion that's in each and every one of us. It's not something you have to learn. Compassion can't be learned. Loving kindness doesn't need to be imposed. It's what's natural. As you let go of your own inner limitations, as you let go of your hate and your constriction. So in my experience, the more you let go, and again, not just letting go with the Sedona method, letting go with any, there's so many positive tools out there right now that support you in letting go. Now, of course, I believe that the Sedona method is an extremely elegant and simple way of doing it, but there are many other ways to do it as well, and it's also the result of even things like therapy. If you do therapy long enough, you tend to let go of a few things. The difference is with what we teach is it's just simpler and faster and easier. But putting aside what we teach, in my experience, every time you let go, things open up. Things, the truth of what's happening in this moment reveals itself to itself. And it makes everything easier, and it makes it's the opposite of avoiding life. Most of us are avoiding life either by pretending it's not there or pretending it's the only thing there. And that's also an avoidance. You don't really live life fully unless you're not clinging to any particular point of view.
So help me to feel how this goes on in your life. Obviously, all of us live in a complex world in which things sometimes arise that we wouldn't have wanted to have happen. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
You get involved in a fender bender, or, you know, I'm trying to think of something that isn't too dramatic, but, you know, the ordinary flow of life includes things that are, you know, dismaying at times or even really heartbreaking. So how might that unfold? Can you give us like a movie of the interior of your process, or of perhaps some imaginary person who's using the technique well, but who's not, you know, immune or somehow walking on water above this life?
Well, again, I'll play it both ways. There's three ways to experience, and there's probably a million ways to experience everything. There obviously is. But we'll just take your hypothetical example. What generally happens is there's a fender bender, and both people get really upset, even if it's just minor damage. Any kind of bodily damage gets exaggerated because of all the tension added to it. You're thinking about the fender bender weeks later, and of course you have another one. So that's one way of experiencing it. Then there's another way of experiencing. You have a fender bender, and you pretend it didn't happen, or you just completely disconnect from the experience, and you just keep having fender benders, and they don't seem to really bother you. But you, after a while, you don't have a car left. But the middle ground is you have a fender bender, you welcome whatever that brings up into awareness, you let it go, you actually start to feel more at ease and more at peace. With even though you just had a fender bender, you deal with the person in a much more integrous way, a much more loving way, and they because of the way you're dealing with them, they respond in kind, and you're less likely to keep having them.
So that all makes sense, but could you kind of so into the perceptual field, there's a sort of smooth, spacious, open-hearted flow. The Mary is driving down the road and comes to a stop sign, and she's just sitting there quietly, and all of a sudden, boom, she's jerked forward by the guy behind her not paying attention and
sure.
bumping into her at 5 miles an hour. She's not really hurt, but she's shocked and dismayed. And what goes on if she's practicing? So
oh, you want me to give a yes? No,
yeah.
I'm speaking more in generality. Well, there's several things that the person might do, and again, these are all things that you can do. Everyone listening to this, the first thing you can do is just simply remember to open and let go inside. It's counterintuitive at the moment. Generally, if we're shocked by anything, the tendency is to contract and hold on. But if you just simply remember to open and let go. What happens is very quickly, whatever you're experiencing in the moment, you let go of. And there's a very simple technique that will help you do that. And the technique is just asking yourself these simple questions. The first question is, could I let this feeling go? And could I just means, are you capable of it? The next question is, would I let it go? And would you just means, are you willing to? And the last question is, when? And when is an invitation to decide to do it now? So, everybody, think of your own fender bender. Everybody, we're having little fender benders in life all the time. You know, I had some today. I had someone on my staff give me one day notice, and they were there that tomorrow is their last day. So obviously there were some issues to deal with. So they just got dealt with, and there was a little letting go I needed to do because it was a surprise. But I didn't actually use this technique because what happens spontaneously for me now is generally what happens if anything comes up, I just am already out of the way, so it just dissipates. But when I first started using the practice, I did this all the time. So let's just everyone think of something that happened recently that was just a fender bender. It was a minor annoyance or a minor disappointment or something that caused a little bit of anxiousness. Let's start with something simple. And then let's do the process. So I'll take us through the process two or three times so you can get a sense of what I'm talking about. And if you're open to it, if you follow this as best you can with your heart as opposed to your head and avoid debate as best you can, I think you'll start to at least get a sense of it. So again, think of whatever your issue is in this moment. And then in this moment, could you just simply welcome whatever you're experiencing, whatever thought, feeling, sound, sensation, picture, just welcome what's being experienced. And then in this moment, as best you can, could you let what you're feeling go? Could you just let it go? Would you? When? And let's run through that one or two more times. Focus on that same thing or anything else that you've been struggling with. And in this moment, could you just simply welcome what you're experiencing? Let it be here. And then as best you can, just for now, could you just simply let go? Would you? When? And I think we should do it one more time. So you may be feeling lighter, and you may be still thinking about it, and that's okay. The only thing I would recommend is you just be open to such a simple process, making the kind of profound changes that it does. And again, this is just a small taste of the Sedona method or what's in the film, but I wanted you to have at least a few practical tools you could have as takeaways from tonight. So in this moment, could you just simply welcome whatever you're experiencing? And then as best you can, just for now, could you let that feeling go? Just could you? Would you? When? Okay, great. So if you were doing this on your own, you could say, could you let it go, would you, and when? Or you could say, could I let it go, would I, and when? But I've had people get rid of severe anxiety disorder, depression, anger, angst, and you name the issue, just with this one simple, small part of what we teach. And it's one of the ones I like to give out on calls like this because it's something that you can start to use right away. And if you use it even just a little, you'll see profound changes in your life just from this little bit of letting go.
So that was beautiful. That was beautiful, Hale. I did some letting go. I'm sure everybody did. That was great. That's one of the things that I've always appreciated about the Sedona method is the tremendously elegant, direct simplicity and gentleness. You know, it doesn't. There's nothing dogmatic or violent about it. It's really an invitation and an inquiry that just opens the space.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. And it seems that now, aspects of this were originated by your mentor, Lester Levinson. But
yes, absolutely.
You've elaborated it significantly since his death. So it's a kind of a co-creation of the both of you. And
yes.
Are there others too?
Other co-creators or...
Yeah.
Yes and no. Every time I do a seminar, it's a co-creation with everyone who's there. In other words, when I inherited the Sedona method from Lester Levinson, and I'll share a little bit about him in a minute, I just want to finish this thought, there was only one way of letting go, which is like we did with the pen, deciding to drop it. And the process I just said, just asking yourself these questions and then making a decision, and similar questions, to simply drop what you're experiencing. But when Lester passed the teachings to me before he died in 94, he said to me that you're going to get this out to a much bigger audience than I did. And it's also going to evolve as you teach it, as you share it. And that's exactly what's happened. when there was only one way of letting go when I got this back in 94, and now we're teaching five. And again, I don't take credit for creating any of it, honestly. What happened is it was what came out of necessity in helping the people who were in front of me. And I don't experience myself as special in any way. When I'm in front of a seminar, the hail simply is not there. That presence of awareness that we all are is what does the seminar. I watch just like everyone else. And it's really kind of fun because there's always new things that come out in my seminars that I've never heard before, including out of this particular mouth. Well, of course, I repeat certain things. But there's always a lot of new material that just simply arises spontaneously, and that's how the process evolved, just simply out of the spontaneous arising of what was necessary to facilitate either that group or that individual in the moment. And so I actually should say a little more about Lester Levinson. The Sedona method was inspired by my mentor, Lester Levinson. And back in 1952, Lester was sent home from a second coronary, basically with a death warrant. The doctors didn't think he'd live more than a few weeks. They didn't even think he should bend down and tie his shoes because they thought it could be fatal. Lester, though, was a very hard-driving person, and he didn't want to give up. He actually debated taking his own life and decided that wasn't a good option. And so what he decided is to go back to the way within himself, and he started a process of self-inquiry. And what he discovered through that process is that we all have no limitations except the ones that we impose, and that we can let them go. And as he discovered that, he just did it intensively with himself. And over just a few month period, he went from a physical and emotional basket case into the kind of profound self-discovery which leaves behind only dimensionless peace. And he lived in this state of dimensionless peacefulness for another 42 years after the doctors gave him a few weeks to live. And he said he was left with only one desire after that, and that was the desire to share what he had discovered with the rest of himself, because he saw everyone as himself. And he dedicated the next 42 years of his life to doing just that. And I met him in 76, and I was immediately drawn to what he was and what the teachings were, and I took the basic program in 1976, and before it was even completed, I had this intuitive recognition that this is what I would be dedicating a significant portion of my life to, and that was 34 years ago, going on 35, and I'm still going strong. Who knows how long I'll do it? You never know, because this body-mind may change tomorrow, but for right now, I'm still doing what Lester inspired me to do back in 1976. And the process that we teach now has always had these very profound non-dual roots. They've just gotten a lot deeper as my own non-dual understanding has deepened. And as the world has changed, the non-duality, even in the 90s, was not as part of mass consciousness as it is now. Now, obviously, it's still only a small minority that are open to non-duality, but it's one of my goals with the Letting Go film is to create a platform to bring non-duality into mass consciousness. And the other goal I have with Letting Go is to help people start to let go of what it is that's causing us to fight with each other and to pollute our world and to not leave us a sustainable lifestyle. And the other is just to simply create a platform to support things that are helping the planet. Once we reach break even on our film, which we hope to do within the next few months, we intend to donate a good portion of the profit to causes that are helping the planet all over the world, because fortunately, my wife and I don't have a family. We have birds, and we don't really need to just accumulate more wealth. not that I'm saying we're going to turn it away, but what we'd like to do more than just accumulate more for ourselves is to see what we can do with the wealth that will come naturally from sharing what we're sharing to really enliven and help the whole planet, do support causes that are helping the planet. So that's our goal with the film, is to help everyone who watches it and help them help others to use it as a platform to shine light on conversations that are going to help the platform, and to actually fund, once we can afford to, once we've kind of gotten above water here, fund things that are helping the planet. And also, one of my passions is non-duality. I believe there are a lot of teachers out there, some of whom were part of this conversation, who are genuine non-dual teachers, and I want to try to expose a larger group of people to those teachings, because we already have reached hundreds of thousands of people, and hopefully through the film we'll reach millions. So if millions of people could start in being exposed to non-duality, I think that would be a very positive thing for the planet.
You know, that's beautiful, and this brings to mind one of the challenges that has been raised to me that I try to take to heart, which is that, gosh, you spiritual activists, you know, you're always involved in the personal growth side of things and trying to liberate people's consciousness, and yet there are so many practical forms of suffering, people who are even being killed, or don't have clean water to drink, or you know that this working to change consciousness is only part of the picture, and why do you always focus there? And you know, I can feel just as you speak the joy in your heart, in your voice, you know, the kind of sincerity of your good intentions. And I know that this dedication to serve takes all those points of view seriously. From a non-dual perspective, of course, the inner and the outer are not really entirely separable.
Right.
How do you respond to the, you know, there's always a grain of truth in every critique. And
of course. No, of course.
Yeah.
No, because, again, I actually totally understand that perspective, because we'll start with what you said, self-help. In my experience, a majority of people who are into self-help, and that's why they're the butt of so many jokes, including myself, is that a lot of times when we're really into self-help, we think we're the only self that needs help. And we get so lost in making our world better that we forget the general world in which we live. And we can get lost in our navel. We get buried in lint. You know how lint accumulates in your navel? So we get so lost in our own navel that we ignore the world, and even ignore that there are others. And that's a trap that we can all fall into. And on the other hand, there are so many people out there who are doing what they can to change the planet, but they're also contributing to the problem, because they're so anti the problem that they're feeding it. So in my experience, it's a balancing point. You of course work on yourself to the degree that you feel motivated to. Some of us don't even want to work on ourselves. We're purists, and we think we just need to discover the truth of who we are, and all takes care of itself. And of course that's true. But in my experience, it's more practical to acknowledge the limitations that appear to be there and deal with them, and at the same time explore that non-dual truth of who you are. But also it does not need to be a bypass. In fact, it shouldn't be. I encourage people. I say, look, release your issues, release your problems, do what you can to change and improve your own life, but at the same time, get into action to help everybody else, even though there are no others. It certainly appear to be others, and where people get stuck is they substitute belief for reality. And non-dual belief or spiritual belief can be just as damning, and sometimes more so, than the limiting beliefs that most of us live in, which is this is the only reality there is, and it's all real, and this, you have to deal with it practically, and everything else is a waste of time. What happens is, if you're willing to let go, you'll naturally feel compassionate. You'll naturally want to get into action to help the other parts of yourself on one level, or just the apparent others. And there's no conflict unless you create one. But again, I can see why people can get upset, because there have been so many instances where I've heard people say this, hey, it's all unreal, so I'm just going to take care of my own awakening and screw the world. And that's not a very healthy point of view in my experience.
So one of the interesting conversations that goes on among serious spiritual practitioners has to do with love.
Yes.
And how some spiritual teachers will talk primarily about becoming liberated from the limitations of the mind and into the kind of spaciousness, the don't know mind that is just, in Blake's couplet, he who clingeth to the joy doth the winged life destroy. He who kisses the joy as it flies lives in eternity's sunrise. So that just in the now, in the nowness, in the isness. Whereas others would say, if you really drop into that isness, the heart overflows with love, and there's tremendous depth of feeling. It's not really just a matter of freedom and of spaciousness and non-attachment, but a very positive force of care and even devotion is what upwells. What would you say about all of that?
Again, yes and yes. I'm sure you've heard the old Zen expression, before awakening, chop wood and carry water. After awakening, chop wood and carry water. Or another way they say it is, before awakening, there are mountains and streams. During awakening, there are no mountains and streams. After awakening, there are mountains and streams. And so what happens is, many of us get caught in the middle. We are starting to experience that non-dual self, and we get attached to that. We get attached to the exquisite beauty of what is, and we don't want to be fully engaged in life, because life has its ups and downs. That's the nature of life. We can withdraw. We'll often release our attachment to life, but not our aversion. And again, when you let go of your attachment and your aversion. So, and then what happens is, yes, there is peace and this exquisite beauty in every moment, but at the same time, you can also feel the human condition much more exquisitely. And you empathize with what everyone's experiencing much more exquisitely. And again, you're naturally drawn to constructive action. And to me, it's just a natural progression that everyone goes through. And sometimes what happens is, when we're going through a natural progression, we can get locked in it. We can try to stop the progression, although you really can't. And we can get locked into a point of view that has nothing to do with what we're actually experiencing in this moment, or what's actually true in this moment. So in my experience, what happens is, if you're willing to let go, you just are carried along in the river of life, and sometimes it's just exquisitely peaceful and quiet, and sometimes it's very noisy. And so what? What you are is beyond both. It's not an experience, whether it's sublime or horrific. And what happens also as you let go and discover the truth of who you are, in my experience, is that your highs get higher and your lows get higher, and also you become more equal-minded. You are less attached to your highs and less adverse to your lows. And again, that's a natural progression. You don't have to force that. If you're trying to live that as a principle as opposed to living what's real for you in this moment, you can get that. You can get really caught. You can get really into trouble. But if, as you let go, again, not just with the Sedona method, with many of the wonderful tools that other people teach and that have been discussed as part of this series, that as you let go, the natural progression unfolds all by itself.
So that sounds to me like qualities of increasing freedom and fluidity and spaciousness. Is there also a quality of deepening love or even bhava or devotion? Like,
yes.
How does that relate to this quality of freedom?
Well, they go hand in hand. And what happens is, even as the bhakti and the love unfolds, there's also, in my experience, as your own self-awareness increases, there's less and less of an identification even with the love. There is a sense that none of this, there's actually, that which you are doesn't progress. You know, we're using language here, so we're gooping it all up. What you are is changeless. What you are is beyond both hate and love, both compassion and selfishness, beyond both love ups and downs. And that becomes more self-obvious to itself. And that isn't a progression. It's just what is. But at the same time, the persona, that which we used to believe we were before we start to discover this point of view, hopefully experientially, not just intellectually, the persona does seem to progress. What you are is motionless, is changeless, is spaceless, is timeless. And so there's but the persona does transform as well, and that does appear to transform in time.
So the this quality of complete non-attached fluidity, allowing the highs and the lows, and trusting the larger process, is fuller and fuller in a sense of a loving way. You've read some of the spiritual literature. You're obviously languaging this in a way that is not full of that ancient language that's intended to be very direct and simple and usable to people who don't necessarily want to take on Eastern, you know, mystical paths and
right.
And cultural baggage that's not their own. But you're a really smart guy, Hale, and you know, for some years, and I know you're paying attention to the larger conversation. So how does this relate to a deepening samadhi? How does this relate
I'll be happy to use a little Eastern language too, if that makes you happy. In my experience, when everything we do here at Sedona Training Associates, we try to take a path that's embracing of the most people who are listening or seeing or experiencing it. We don't want to be exclusive. We want to be inclusive. And I find that if you get the language becomes too Eastern, not that I honestly, there's still a personal preference within me. I mean, I have on my Blu-ray player at home, I have a bunch of music channels, and the ones I listen to are rock and roll from the 60s and 70s, but more often than not, I'm listening to the channels that have chanting, you know, and a lot of it is, there's some Gregorian chanting, but a lot of it is Eastern chanting. So this particular body mind has a preference for that. But I try not to impose that on anyone. But if you'd like, I can use Eastern language. And in my experience, what happens as you let go is there is this natural progression or a deepening of more of a sahaj samadhi, which is a samadhi where you're aware of the truth of who you are, and at the same time, you're fully engaged in life. And And also, to use Eastern language, what the practices that we teach are designed to dissolve the tendencies, or vasanas is what they call it in Hinduism, the seeds, karmic seeds. That's what gets dissolved as you let go, as you use the processes that we teach. But at the same time, you can think that's all a bunch of caca and still get tremendous value out of what we teach, and that's intentional. Because, again, we try to teach everything in a way where if you want to improve your golf game, you want to make more money, have better relationships, have more radiant health, or you want to just simply experience samadhi more, you can use the same techniques and processes to help support you in those goals. And those are all real goals that people are experiencing every day through letting go.
And in the continual process of letting go, do you see a mobilization of a different level of human capacity that gives you some sense of possibility and hope relative to the larger karmic patterns that we talked about earlier?
Absolutely.
Gave rise to this whole series?
Absolutely. What I say in the Letting Go movie is that this film is just one of the things that are happening at the moment that are part of a global awakening that's happening in consciousness. Now, unfortunately, it's still a small minority of the population, but I believe strongly in the hundredth monkey theory, and I often feel like a monkey too. What I think is happening is a small minority of us are awakening to the truth of who we are, and that's contagious, not just to the people who are interested in it, but it's contagious into mass consciousness. I mean, look at what happened. 33 million people, or it may have been 3 million, it depends who you talk to, but even 3 million people saw the Oprah Eckhart Tolle online 10-week seminar. Not just watched it live, but over time logged into it. To me, that's a representation.
Yeah, I think it's 3.3 million, but it's still really fantastic.
Yeah, even 3.3 million is really fantastic. Recently, someone quoted me 33 million, but I think they were puffing a little. But it's just a zero. So
just moving a decimal, yeah.
We're just moving a decimal place. But even 3.3 million, think about 20 or 30 years ago, 3.3 million people. And again, Eckhart Tolle's teachings aren't pure non-duality, but they're pretty good for mass consciousness. And 3.3 million people experiencing that is huge. And what we're hoping to do with the Letting Go film is to add at least a zero. Because the Letting Go film is designed to help people where they're at, to either have more money or better relationships or more radiant health, but also to expose them into this non-dual perspective in a very gentle, loving, easy way, and at the same time give them practical tools that they can use in their life every moment. And so we're hoping to reach a broader audience. Whether it will happen or not, I have no idea. You know, at the moment, only thousands of people have seen it, not millions. But it is spreading across the social world and across the planet, and I'm hoping, you know, I have high hopes. Whether it happens or not, it's not up to me anyway. Whatever happens is what's going to happen. To me, what we're doing with the Sedona method and with Letting Go is just part of what's happening all over the world. Everyone who's been on this call and who will be on these calls is part of the Beyond Awakening series. Everyone there, and there are hundreds and hundreds of tools and techniques and processes that are very valuable, and teachers who are very valuable on the planet that are exposing people to the non-dual perspective, and also just exposing people to tools and tips and techniques that are designed to simply help alleviate the suffering that we're all experiencing. And so I am very hopeful. If this wasn't going on at all, then I'd be very pessimistic. But I'm also kind of a hopeful guy to begin with. But So I see some light at the end of the tunnel. That light still may be far off, and there still could be a bunch of left and right turns that may appear to be going off track, but I am very encouraged that we are moving towards a global awakening of sorts that will help us all start to work together as the global family that we are. We don't live in a vacuum. We don't live in our own little world, except in our own psychological world. But in truth, there's only one world. And it's not being lived by a lot of different people. It's being lived as an expression of the one. And so that perspective is getting out into mass consciousness. And to me, that's exciting.
Absolutely. And I feel the same way. And part of what I think I've been trying to do in creating this series is to engage a conversation about how we can cohere as that growing tip of human culture that is that is touched deeply by a higher awareness and a deeper freedom and a willingness to become a cohesive culture. You know, I sometimes call it an integral evolutionary culture,
right.
Culture that's able to engage the complexity of our world from a much freer position,
yes.
In a different spirit. And I certainly, you know, have welcomed all the guests and certainly welcome you, you know, as a co-evolutionary, you know, brother or sister in this process. And in your work, you know, you're doing what you can to kind of educate large groups of people. Do you have a sense of ways that we can cohere? And I know that for me, there has been a sense that we will become more influential when we are able to manifest a new order of good works. That, you know, it's not that there's anything wrong with the good works that people have done, but, you know, in the past, the things that people have known how to do are to give alms to the poor or fly in relief efforts or improve the sewage system or the healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are certain things that we're able to do, but there are systemic issues that are very profound, and I think many of us would like to affect the systems, to do good in a way that would be metasystemic, that would have a multiplied efficacy.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we also need to stay very close to our hearts and to the simplicity of our care and the freedom and flow of a non-attached, not overly mentally focused mode of being.
Sure.
What can you offer in terms of maybe more particular granularity of this kind of envisioning of this?
Well, again, there's several ways that this will come about. One is that individually, organizations like yours and mine and many thousands of other organizations on the planet will do the best we can within our own sphere. But the other thing that I think is required, and that's something that we're actually promoting through our community, where our community is not just about the Sedona method. Our community, we've started a conversation about what's for the highest and best good for the planet. We've started a conversation where I'm going to expose non-dual teachers to my community. We haven't started that one yet. I'm going to start that within the next month. We're starting conversations about the law of attraction so that it can go beyond just so people can do it more effectively, but also so it can be used and not just for selfish means. So one of the things we can do is join together in conversation in places in community so we become more of like a learning community where there's an open and honest and equal sharing of information in a non-competitive way. So that's one thing that I think will help. And we're already doing what we can to help, and we're going to keep doing that. The other thing that I intend to do is, again, I don't believe that the Sedona method is the only way. I think there are many ways. So I'm going to try to expose the people that look to me for guidance to all the things that I think are going to be helpful to them, not just what we do. So those are a few things. And at the same time, I'm trying to expose my community to causes like 4 years ago, Lynn Twist is a friend of mine, and she has an organization called Pachamama and 4 years Go that is trying to help people, trying to bring awareness into the mass culture about some of the issues that we have to deal with, and encouraging people to make commitments to take conscious action. So I think what would help is if we all work together cooperatively to support the things that are working, and in a non-competitive way, work together so that from a place of a feeling of I'm enough and there's enough, so that we can all work together to bring about this change in awareness, so that we can, and we don't have to reject the old, but we can also help bring in the new. And I think that's what's happening spontaneously with the type of things that we're both already doing. But to me, that's the key. The key is to honor your own path, your own perspective, but know that it's just one perspective. There, if you only see one perspective, whatever, no matter how highfalutin it is, then you've murdered or eliminated all other perspectives. And so what I do is encourage people who are working with us to embrace all perspectives and be attached to none, and just keep stretching past the obvious. And also, I like to remind people that they don't need to work on themselves to be who they already are. Again, if you get too lost in self-help, it can become a perpetual job. But if you recognize that what you are is already whole and complete and perfect as it is, you don't need to always be working on yourself. You can be enjoying life, and you can also be doing what's appropriate in this moment, not only to further your own self-interest, but to further the common good.
Well, beautiful. I'd love to just keep going, but I know there are many people listening who'd like to join the conversation. So if you're listening via the web, I want to invite you to go ahead and type out a question in the Instant Teleseminar window. And if you are calling in via the phone line, you can raise your hand by pressing *2 on your handset. Before we begin answering questions, I want to thank some of our wonderful sponsors, including Maestro Conference. Maestro Conference is a unique voice-based online collaboration platform that integrates the web and your telephone to support large-scale, real-time, remote conferences, seminars, and interactive events. Using cutting-edge technology that empowers individual awareness and engagement, Maestro Conference offers a whole new way to engage people and create relationships, combining the ease of passive media with the engagement and excitement of live events. Visit them on the web at maestroconference.com. That's M-A-E-S-T-R-O, maestroconference.com. And I want to mention, in response to those of you who asked about it after Tuesday's dialogue, you can find out more about the teachings and writings of Lama Surya Das at surya.org. That's SURYA.org. And also at askthelama.com. That's askthelama.com. And I want to add to the mentions of the movie that Hale's been involved with, from the Sedona Method. It is an entertaining and delightful movie. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it will guide you into some of the same simple techniques that Hale has shared with us, and also go deeper and show how it applies to many aspects of life. It's designed to support the worldwide awakening to truth that's already sweeping the planet. So if you're already exploring the non-dual path, then you'll find its insights enlightening and refreshing. And it also gives you a whole host of powerful tools to use to introduce non-duality to those around you. As you watch this movie, it will make you laugh and cry as it deepens your own understanding and openness to your own intuitive knowledge. So you can view the film for free by visiting lettinggo.tv/movie DVD. And as a special gift to you, our listeners, Hale has given us a code that you can use to view the movie for free, and that's Beyond Awakening. Is that case sensitive, Hale?
No, it's just, and it's all just one word.
So just run together, Beyond Awakening, when you check out. Otherwise, you have to pay, but you'll be able to see it for free. And we'll also mention this in the email that we'll be sending you on Sunday morning announcing our next call with Gene Houston. So you can look for it and simply use this code during the checkout process for the movie, and that'll give you an instant online free view of it. So at the end of this call, I will tell you a little more about my upcoming interviews. I'll be talking with the amazing Gene Houston this Sunday, November 21st at 5 p.m. Pacific. And then the following week, we'll take off Thursday, of course. It'll be Thanksgiving here in the United States. But then we'll reconvene on Sunday, November 28th, for an interview with Ram Dass, formerly Richard Alpert, a truly beautiful human being who will offer us his unique and beautiful perspective on the past and future of spiritual practice. Okay, so looking at our teleseminar questions, we have a question from Francis in Bolton in the UK. Isn't love one side of duality? Would love exist if fear did not?
Yes and yes. So the way most of us experience love, it is just part of the same heads and tails coin of hate. In my experience, every feeling except love is varying degrees of hatefulness. So you're absolutely correct. The way most of us experience love, it requires hate, or it's part of the hate-love paradigm. I hate you, I love you. And so on that level, you're absolutely correct. But on another level, in my experience, there's another love that is beyond polarity, which is just this this sense of unicity or unity, or there is only one, that also one of the side effects of that is this sense of compassion. But that is not, doesn't need fear in order to be. That's beyond both hate and the love that most of us experience. So it is beyond what most of us call love. Unfortunately, most of us call love is if you pat me on the rear end, I'll blow in your ear. That's not really love. And yes, that comes with hate and fear and all other emotion. So love as an emotion has its opposites. But love it as a state of being, which is what you are, it doesn't need an opposite to be.
Thank you. As you go into that, I find myself thinking of my a friend of mine, Jackie Bergman, in Stockholm, who's written a book called Fear or Love. And there are an awful lot of people who offer that as a as the simple paradigm, you know, that either you're moving forward in love or pulling away in fear. What do you think of that?
Oh, I think it's a positive stepping stone. It's also the core of Course in Miracles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably where that book came from. But in my experience, that's only a stepping stone. Just like in my experience, the law of attraction is only a stepping stone. There is something beyond both the law of attraction and this love-hate or love-fear paradigm. And that is, as you just let go of both and discover the truth of who you are, you discover that there's something beyond polarities that embraces all polarities. It doesn't deny them, but it's not limited to any particular polarity. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that perspective. In fact, it's encouraging people to be more loving is fantastic. I highly recommend it. But I just wouldn't stop there, because if there's a you to be loving, then there's some limitation.
Mm.
But love, and one definition of love, and it's one I'm creating spontaneously in the moment, although I'm sure some non-dual teachers will agree with this, to the degree that there's an absence of the sense of you, to that degree that there is love, or there is presence. To me, those are sin.
Mm. Beautiful. Beautiful.
And another expression I've heard is, your absence is God's presence. The only problem with that is a lot of people have all these concepts about God, which kind of confuses things. To the degree that there's a lack of identity, to the degree that there's also this experiencing of the truth of who we are, which is unconditional love, which is peace, which is just beingness or isness.
Beautiful. If you'd like to ask a question of Hale, please raise your hand by pressing star 2 on your handset. I have a question from Jerry I did have a question from Jerry in Hilo, Hawaii. Let's see. Here we are. Jerry, you're on the air.
Oh, aloha. My question has to do with the awareness that the ancient tradition of bringing people into the awareness of non-duality was seen as something that had to be kept very carefully and done very secretly and sacredly, because a person who doesn't truly achieve non-duality as an understanding of the basis of reality has then the notion that can become can come to the conclusion that since there's neither good nor evil, they are therefore free to be evil. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is the reason for those old attitudes of keep it from the people and let them take them in by means of a sacred process. And I'm just curious about how you relate to that. I mean, you're talking about, you know, helping people to be more wealthy and such like, but one would hope that their quest for such things didn't involve doing evil, which, you know.
No, it's a very fair question. So there's two things that are coming up about that. First off, the ancient traditions were part of a very different time and culture. They were before the internet. They were before the mass. It was very rare to come across a non-dual teacher, even 20 years ago, or 30 years ago, and 100 years ago, or 1,000 years ago. It was a very rare privilege, reserved for very few who had already done a tremendous amount of preparation. So in my experience, the mass consciousness has changed to the point where there's a much broader group of people who are open to this perspective. The other thing I've noticed is that anything that you get simply intellectually can be abused. Christianity, Judaism, the Muslim religion, the Hindu religion, all teachings of truth, if gotten just intellectually or believed as dogma, can and will be abused and misused. It's happening all over the planet right now. But on the other hand, true understanding, which is only possible through direct experience, in my experience, cannot be abused. Because the more you recognize the truth of who you are, it's not a feeling of license. It's the exact opposite. The more you recognize the truth of who you are, the less you see separation, the more you feel love and compassion for all pair and others. So the exact opposite happens. You even if you try to be selfish, it gets harder and harder to be selfish because you don't think there's a self to accumulate for. So I think that the keeping it secret thing that used to be part of ancient traditions, that's breaking down even in India, partially because of the internet. You can get very profound teachings that used to be only reserved for the very few close devotees who had committed their whole lives to their teacher, that you can now find it for free on the internet. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a reflection of where mass consciousness is. Will some people abuse it? Of course. But holding it back from all of us because a very small minority might get it only intellectually and then try to abuse it, I think is a mistake. Because if mass consciousness can embrace non-duality or oneness or the truth, well, not the one singular truth as opposed to all other truths, but just the sense that we are all one, and that separate individual isn't real. If that actually got into mass consciousness, there's no way it could cause destruction on the planet. It would cause the opposite. And on the other hand, we're not really choosing or doing any of this. It's simply what's happening. If the ancient traditions were meant to prevail and keep everything secret, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Terry wouldn't be doing what he was doing, I wouldn't be doing what I was doing, and the thousands of other groups and organizations around the planet which are giving forth freely teachings that used to be reserved for a chosen few wouldn't be happening. It's happening because it's time and it's the place and it's now.
May I ask
Thank you, Jerry.
One thing. Can you give that code for letting go something TV? I didn't get
that. Oh, okay. I'll repeat that. Our website for the movie is lettinggo.tv. Like the one, you just combine those two words, and it's not .com, it's .tv. And if you go to the store there, you'll see there's an online view. If you click on that and you put in the code Beyond Awakening, you'll be able to get the view for free. So it's a gift for everyone listening to this, and it's a gift for everyone in Terry's sphere of influence, so, because he's going to send it out via email. It's just that we would like to support people, and what we found is when people watch this film, it has a very profound transformative effect on their lives, and we're hoping that enough people, of course, want to buy a DVD, so we'll stay in business. But if not. But again, that's why we're giving out the free view, is because we really want you to be able to experience it first and then decide if you want to buy it afterwards. And if you don't, that's great too.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Hale. Sarah from Nashville says, this process of letting go in the beginning seems to me like an intellectual exercise. Is it safe to say that it becomes experiential as you continue it?
Oh, yes. That's very common. Honestly, even when I first started learning to let go, I was releasing from the neck up. And I was not really engaged with my body, mind, or with my emotions. And especially men tend to do that a little bit more than women. But what I found is that if you let go, even intellectually, there are profound changes. But as you let go, it deepens profoundly. I mean, again, the letting go we did tonight as a group, we did the most basic part of our process for about 2.5 minutes. And a lot of the people listening to this probably noticed profound benefit just from that. But what happens is, as you use it in your life, it becomes second nature. So you're basically letting go and discovering the truth of who you are more and more all the time. And it becomes less of a process and more of a way of life. And as that happens, it becomes less intellectual. But unfortunately, we live in a world that's very intellect-driven, so, and we're using language. So to deny the intellect is a mistake. But to think it's the only thing there is also a mistake. So the balancing point between the two is you start where you're at, and you do the best you can.
Thanks, Hale. We have another question from Paula in Perth, Western Australia. What do you believe to be the truth of who we are?
in my experience, the truth of who we are is just simply awareness or presence or isness. It's not opposed to everything else. That in my experience, the world, you, the appearance of you, the appearance of me, is simply appearing in or on this presence or awareness that we are. There's not two. There's only one. So that's how I experience it. But again, one thing I haven't said tonight, which I like to say at least once whenever I speak, is please don't believe a word I say. Because if you just simply believe what I say instead of experiencing it directly for yourself, you'll find that it becomes a holdback. Believing in non-duality is not the same as having it be your living experience. So believing who you are, believing the truth of who you are from someone else is a waste of time. So it really doesn't matter what my perception is of who you are or who what we are. I like what better than who, because it's not really a who in my experience. It's impersonal. What I recommend you do is do your own exploration. Use what you learned tonight. Use what you learned from every teacher that you resonate with. But don't believe anything anyone tells you. Take it for checking. Be open to it as a possibility. And then do your own exploration.
Beautiful. Thank you. We have a question from George Frias in Salt Lake City, Utah. You're live on the line.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the broadcast.
Hi. I have a question about the Sonoma method. I've been experiencing a lot of deep feelings of stress because for a long time I've been in a really deep patterns of depression, of feelings of depression, and would this be something that would help me get out of those patterns that I've had? In the past years, I've experienced really good help from other people, but this actually sounds like something that takes further into what I want to achieve.
Oh, sure. What you'll find is that if you start letting go using the Sedona method or any other good process, but if you're attracted to this, follow your heart, is that it can help even with long-standing physical or psychological problems. Although I have to say, just for clarity's sake here, we're not a medical organization. I'm not a doctor or a psychologist.
Right.
And we don't treat, diagnose, cure, or advise about things that you should go to a doctor for. But at the same time, we've had people who have been severely depressed or on medications for anxiety or any of the and many other problems like that, who have combined what they're doing with their doctor or therapist with releasing to great result. And there are many people, too, who just on their own, just using the Sedona method, have let go of decades-long issues of stress or tension, anxiety, anger, any of the emotionally based issues that most of us face can either be alleviated or completely eliminated, in my experience, through letting go. One out of five people here, at least here in the United States, are currently on or have been on some sort of psychoactive medication, which is kind of a sad number. 20%, and I think it's the truth worldwide, except maybe in developing countries only because they can't afford those drugs. But it doesn't mean that the mental illness isn't there. And by the way, I don't like that term mental illness because there is no, in my experience, there's just simply emotions that have gone run amok, and you can take charge of your emotions and let them go is the bottom line. And another thing that you'll find really helpful is just simply remembering that no matter how strong or how long-standing a feeling is, it's just a feeling. It's not you, and you can let it go. So, to just go back to a simple yes and no, can the Sedona method help you? Absolutely.
Okay. Well, thank you.
I appreciate
that you talk about the Sedona method, and thank you for definitely go look for that movie.
Wonderful.
Thanks.
We have another question here from Christina in Kingston, Ontario, in Canada. If welcoming the experience is intense and practicing letting it go, even if you can't, will eventually get easier.
Oh, absolutely.
Will this take place even with, for instance, letting go of someone who left you with many burdens?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've helped, actually, one of the people in the film, again, remember, you can watch it for free at lettinggo.tv and use Beyond Awakening as a code. But one of the people, even in the film, you'll watch them dissolve 20 years worth of grief over a loss of a wife who left him with two children. The letting go is always helpful in my experience. Of course, there are times where it's appropriate to hold on to. I don't want to say you should only let go every second, because sometimes you need to hold on. I mean, if you were climbing a ladder and you only let go, you'd be in trouble. But you'd fall down. But at the same time, most of us are on the side of holding on way more than we need to. So even, no matter how extreme your circumstances are and how hard it seems in the moment to welcome it and to let go, if you're persistent and if you're open at least to the possibility of letting go, you'll find that you can, and you will. Just give it a little time. The letting go that we did tonight on the call, again, was 2 or 3 minutes. It might take 5 or 10 before you'll start feeling more of a profound shift, especially if it's been a long-standing issue.
Great. We have quite a few more questions. I wish we could take them all. One that seems like a very interesting one is, does letting go help you understand how to make decisions? Like, how do we know what to do for the greatest good when
it seems that
there are so many choices without right and wrong answers? This is from Diane in Santa Fe.
Yes. My answer is absolutely yes, in several ways. First off, let me just say something from a non-dual perspective first, for those of you interested in that, and then I'll take it more to a general level. In my experience, there is no decider. There's simply deciding. And what happens is we have conflicting thoughts and feelings, and they basically fight it out. And one wins, and then we say, I decided after the fact. So a technique you can use, which is actually very powerful, I'll give it out right now, is what you do is you welcome all the conflicting thoughts and feelings and you let them have it out. And you'll find if you stop trying to moderate and trying to sort through it all and you let the thoughts and feelings kind of go at it for a minute or two, what happens is there's a clear winner. And everything else falls away and it really shortcuts the whole decision-making process. So that's one thing you can do. But the other thing you can do is, in my experience, we're always being intuitively guided, but we don't know that because we can't always tell the difference between what's intuitive guidance or coming from clear reason and what's just being being motivated by past issues or problems or reactions. And the way to tell the difference is very simple. If you're trying to make a decision and you have a lot of conflict and you simply let go, the mind clears. And what's left is this quiet understanding, this quiet knowingness. And then knowing what's right for you becomes very simple. And there are some very powerful tools that would take way too long than we have tonight to explain that are part of what we teach in the Sedona Method to expedite that. But the simple tool I just gave out of welcoming all the conflicting thoughts and feelings all at once and just let them have a party, you'd be surprised how quickly they simply resolve themselves, and then you see what the decision is. And it's often very obvious.
Well, thank you so much, Hale. This has been really great. It looks like we've run out of time, but before I tell everybody what's coming up in a little more detail and open up the lines so that we can hear each other's voices and say goodbye, a few reminders. If you're interested to dive deeper into this conversation, be sure and visit our blog at beyondawakeningseries.com/blog, where I periodically blog, and we have a schedule of upcoming sessions and where you can download the sessions. And there's a lively exchange that's been taking place, looking at the comments for some of the blog entries. You can check out my corner where my blog is. That's all at beyondawakeningseries.com/blog. We also have a Facebook group where much of the same conversation is taking place over there at beyondawakeningseries.com/Facebook. And you can find both forums by clicking on the link in the email we sent you earlier today, too. You're invited to post your comments about today's dialogue and also suggestions or questions for any of our upcoming dialogues. And please let others know about the series. Please forward them any of the emails that you've received, or you can just invite them to register at beyondawakeningseries.com. And to learn more about my work, please visit integralspiritualpractice.com, where you'll find a host of resources, including videos and audios and my fullest recent blog entries. I also want to thank some of the other partners and sponsors who've made all this possible, especially New Dimensions Media. Check out New Dimensions to hear some of the leading point writers in the world, such as Alice Walker, Dr. Andrew Weil, Gene Houston, Bill Moyers, David White, and many others, as they address a wide range of topics, including health and healing, science, eco-activism, social change, and spirituality. That's New Dimensions Media at newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. And please remember to tune in on Sunday, November 21st, again at 5 p.m., where I'll be talking with the researcher, visionary, and force of nature named Dr. Gene Houston. The conversation will be titled, A New Order of Spirituality in Our Time. Gene has written that the mystical experience is perhaps the greatest accelerator of evolutionary enhancement. Through it, we gain entrance into the next stage of our unfolding, both individually and collectively. Once the province of the few, the mystical path may now be the requirement of the many. So don't miss what promises to be a powerful and direct exploration of the leading edge of our evolution with Dr. Gene Houston this Sunday. And a week later, on the Sunday after Thanksgiving, that will be no sessions next week because of the American Thanksgiving holiday, I'll be joined with Ram Dass on the occasion of the 40th anniversary of the publication of his historical book, Be Here Now, and the release of his new book, Be Love Now. So thank you so much for joining me. And Hale, let's open up our phone line so everybody can hear each other say good voices, hear each other's voices and say goodbye. Bye, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night,
everyone.
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you, Hale.
Thank you.
All right. Wonderful. Well, it's been a delight to be here with you, Hale. Thanks so much.
Thank you.